Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Yeah!
Hump Day!
Yeah!
Hump Day!
Wednesday's the best day.
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss.
Yeah!
Dustin is running our Twitch stream, and of course we have Country over in the booth. We are scattered across the city again, but that just shows you how amazing we are in 2020. So we started the beginning of 2020. This is our last show of 2020.
Oh my God.
I know, it's pretty crazy, right? So the next show we have, we will be wishing everybody a brand new year, right? Monday is the 4th, so we will hear from everybody on the 6th. But what's crazy about that is to think about the amount of time that is surpassed in 2020, right? So we look at...
It's like nothing has passed.
It's weird, right? It's like so much time has gone by, but nothing has happened. And I don't know if you remember, right? And I like to think about this because it is the very end of 2020. And, you know, we're all looking for a new year and a new start. And while things aren't just going to snap our fingers, 2021, everything changes, it's at least hope for it's a future, right? It's the end of a year and the beginning of something new. And,
right.
And the thought process behind
the thought of a new beginning.
A new beginning and something that's going to keep everybody happy, healthy, and whole and get back to sort of what we know as being normal. So, like, we look at 2020 and say, my God, what have we done? What has happened? But here's the thing. Can it get any worse in 2021? It could.
Sure.
But we're going to try to talk about the weird, crazy things that happened in 2020 and how we're hoping that we have learned from them and that we will rise, conquer, and
prevail.
Yeah. And in 2021, things are either, it's just going to be a epic conquering stories or back to normal. But in 2020, it's like all of the things that we did, right? Like, do you remember where you were when they first announced that the pandemic happened? Do you remember that happening?
No, not really, because it to me, it was some weird news story. And then I'm like, wow, this is really some serious stuff going on here. This is pretty crazy.
So here's why.
But I don't remember it like I remember where I was on 9/11.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I do. And maybe it's where I was, but I was in London at the time traveling. And, you know, I know that the first case obviously came out in December of 2018, right? And the outbreak in Wuhan happened in January of 2019,
right.
Of 2020. But what I do remember is I remember standing in the hotel in London and looking and being like, oh my gosh, they just shut down a city with over 1 million people in it. And I remember thinking like, that's going to be problematic. And then being concerned about getting home, right? Because they started shutting down travel. And at that time, nobody knew what was going on, really. It was the very beginning stages. So it was just,
and it was
just
very weird.
Travel.
It's like,
they
serious?
Were, like, oh,
we're already shutting down travel? This, you know, just because crazy.
So here we are, the last show of 2020, and there's been some incredible things that have happened, right? Poker stopped almost effectively, shut down for all intent and purposes.
So yeah, literally shut down.
Shut down, restarted.
And shut down again in some places.
Restarted again, shut down, restarted, probably more than twice, I would think, right? In many places, but we're still trucking along, and I think that's what's important is that
we've adapted.
We're like the cockroach.
Yeah, he can't kill us. We're gonna keep on rolling. We will still be in action no matter what. COVID, we're not scared of you.
And I like it. But that makes me happy. So
and we've done great here. Just, you know, like we say, poker shut down, restarted in many parts of the country. We shut down here in Jacksonville, and we were literally totally shut down for a couple months, restarted, didn't know what to expect. P- people came back. They came back slowly, and but then, you know, we've done a great job. We have a lot of, it was hard to get used to. It's hard to get used to telling people, sorry, you got to wear your mask. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you got to wear your mask. You got to take this hand sanitizer. Now it's, you know, in a weird way, unfortunately, it's commonplace when you walk in. And it didn't take that long, and the players understood, and everybody has done a great job, players, staff, everything. And we've been able to remain open and stay in action.
I like it. You know, one of the other things is it's kind of interesting because I need to look up the story, but there, Seminole Hard Rock had one of their first tournaments, if not the first tournament that they hosted after coming out of the pandemic. And there was about, I think, four of our regular Jacksonville players that made big, deep runs, if not final table, that event.
That's right.
Which is pretty, awesome.
Zano, right?
Yeah, it's really great. Like, I have to go back and I have to look exactly who it was and where they placed. But I know they had some deep runs, and it really kind of speaks to the player base in Jacksonville and how we, you know, we do have this incredible base of players, some that are really fantastic and amazing that are on their way to the next phase, right? Which we'll be reporting and talking about them winning the World Series of Poker maybe 2 years from now when things go back to normal. But it's really fun to be able to see that through a pandemic, through a shutdown, and then through a reopening, to see many of our players rise immediately to the top is kind of, I feel proud about that. I feel proud as a city and as a poker community to say that many of our players prevailed through the pandemic. Yep. And I think that that's been really great. So obviously the World Series of Poker is a huge hot topic right now. So we're going to get into that because there's plenty of stuff to dive into and so many things to talk about. There's so much controversy, right, about what's happened with the World Series of Poker. It's amazing that they even happened to host an event, but then what they did and, you know, the ramifications if you didn't make it or if you tested positive. We're going to dig all into all of that stuff in the next segment. So it'll be pretty interesting because I feel like, you know, my question behind this is wondering, as we look to the future of tournament poker in a capacity where it's televised or driven by either the WSOP or the WPT, right? World Poker Tour, World Series of Poker, whether it's Card Player Poker Tour, any of these poker tours, do we need to be concerned about some of the things that the World Series of Poker has now just implemented in their tournament? Are they setting a standard? Is this something you're worried about? And like, I think that it's a good topic of conversation because it's just happened. It's brand new and nobody's ever been through it before. And so they kind of had to, you know, baptism by fire, if you will, and they host one of the biggest, most prestigious events in the entire world. And they have to find their way through it. And now what that looks like is almost a disaster with all due respect.
Yeah, it's almost, and it's like teetering on the edge of a major disaster. Yeah. And it's still not over.
And it's still not over. Yeah, ways to go, but
right.
There's lots to talk about with that. So World Series of Poker Talk coming up to you in the next segment. But how about this? I mean, there's lots of conversations about these heads-up matches, whether it's the Doug Polk versus Daniel Negreanu, or whether it's the Phil Galfond versus X, Y, or Z, as he has so many. But the grudge match between Negreanu and Polk continues on. And they did take a break for the World Series of Poker so they could actually play in that. And if I do recall, neither one of their names are on the short list. So I'm guessing they're going to go back to play here pretty soon. But just a few short weeks ago, Doug Polk was up more than $950,000 over just shy of 10,000 hands. So he's up almost $1 million.
Wow.
In 10,000 hands.
That's real money.
That's real money. Heading into their session December 11th. So it was kind of like the general consensus. Everybody, including Polk, was basically like, Negreanu is running bad. You know, this is like, this could snap turn very quickly. And I believe they were playing a sample of, I think it was 25,000 hands is what they were planning to play. So
you think Doug Polk is saying that just to make him feel good so he doesn't just freak out and quit? He wants to keep my, you know, you're just running bad. It could change at any given time.
I mean, I don't think so because I feel like people are commentating and they're talking about the hand. So for him not to recognize the fact that he is running poor would be a mistake. It would make him look like a complete idiot.
But it's kind of fun.
Yeah. So, you know, all right. So they go back to playing for a little while. Negreanu wins 100, like around 145,000 over around 840 hands, roughly. They do a marathon session, and that brings them up to just before the WSOP kicks off, which would have been December 21st, so last week, right? What's interesting about this is they're playing 2 in 400, okay? And you think about being up almost a million, having a huge swing, and then coming back to tip the scales and only being up by about 150,000. That's a pretty large swing.
Wait, say that again. Like. He was up a million and then only up 100,000?
Up a million. Negreanu wins about 150,000.
Right.
And then, yes. So he goes from up a million to losing 150,000 right. over one span, and then he loses another 120,000. So he.
But it's still a lot. That's like 20. It's like 22%.
It's like a third, right? It's like let's just call it 300,000 effectively.
Yeah, then it'd be like a third. That's a lot.
That's a lot. I feel like that's a lot in two sessions.
It means that given the stakes they're playing at, it could turn.
It could
turn. And Daniel, although in a big hole, he could theoretically run good and make a comeback.
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, they hit the halfway mark at 12,500 hands just before Christmas. And they stopped to play the WSOP, and now that has finished, I'm sure they're probably still taking breaks as they're waiting for this to completely play out and figure out whether or not they need to do any commentating or whatnot. But it is interesting. So there's another piece of the equation. Also, how about Hawaii is looking to put in casinos?
Hawaii.
Really?
So, you know, we've done trivia questions here, and the trivia question always is there are only two states in the United States, and I hope this is still true, that have absolute zero forms of gambling, nothing. And nobody can ever get this right. You can guess one of them. I mean, not even a lottery. One of them is Utah. But then the second one is Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty impressive because they have a commission voted 5-4 in favor of building a casino on Oahu Island.
Wow.
So it looks like they legalized online gaming in 2017, but it never really passed too much further than that. So now they're kind of on their next hurdle. I'm totally intrigued by this. This would be amazing, I think, because during the time of a pandemic, of implementing that, like, I feel like that's almost kind of genius, right? Because they kind of have a leg up to say, we need money to fund our city. So they're taking advantage of a situation and really putting it to good for the gaming industry. And I think that that's great. So we'll have to follow Hawaii and see what happens. And by follow, I mean, maybe on my surfboard.
I like it.
All right. We need to take a quick break. But when we come back, we have 1010XL main event seats to give away, because don't forget our tournament is coming up in January. Plus, all talk about the World Series of Poker, all the things they didn't do, things that were right, things that were wrong, and what's to come. That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss. Dustin running the stream and Country over there in the booth. We're spread out across the city, as we mentioned earlier in the first segment, and it's just part of 2020.
That's just what we got. It's what we got to deal with.
So, you know what's funny is I was looking at December, and I have been in quarantine through the month of December all but 6 days. And that's due to, and that's not because I had the coronavirus. That's due to contact tracing or contact or something, which is kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, it's weird. And it's been happening to, you know, lots of people. You get phone calls and you're like, what? What are you talking about?
It's just part of what you do. So you just stay home.
So you just stay home, yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. So as I've been staying home, obviously I've had plenty of time to read and look into things that are going on. So the World Series of Poker is happening, and this is one of the most tremendous feats that has happened during the year 2020. right? We have had entire shutdowns of casinos, of cities, of states, of anything and everything. And somehow the World Series of Poker found a way to create and build their tournament. So the first part was an online series of events that happened during the summer. And then after much debate between players and industry leaders, whether or not they should have a $10,000 main event. And they chose to do so. Now, mind you, they chose to do this after the pandemic has already been in full force. They had done the World Series of Poker online events during the summer. So they knew what to expect, kind of what to look for, how things were going to flow. They probably just didn't obviously know the number of people that they would get to participate. Okay.
Correct.
So the World Series of Poker puts in some weird rules, protocols, and tournament structures. So the first thing is they do a domestic and an international.
Correct. And remember, to play domestic on the World Series of Poker, it's worldseriesofpoker.com online site. You have to be in Nevada, New Jersey, or Delaware. I think that's it. But for some reason, Delaware wasn't allowed to play in the World Series. I don't know why they had to cut out poor Delaware. But in the United States, you had to be basically Nevada, New Jersey. Now, I'll let you go ahead. But the international one, you could be in a lot of places. I think Canada, Mexico.
Effectively anywhere outside of the United States.
Right.
But there's a lot of places that
allows online poker. Now, right. Europe is kind of separate. Like, there's certain countries in Europe where you can play online poker, but only with people in that country. So not all of Europe is really included in this. And I don't know which ones are which. But I know Canada, Mexico, and several European countries and other parts of the world.
Now, we talked about this a little bit in the coming weeks, and you didn't seem to think that they would get much of a turnout, right? Like, you were kind of, you felt like their numbers would be, like, so they, what did they get for their international? Like, 800 and something plus, like, 870 something? Is that roughly around, that's about roughly about the right number? And for the domestic, it was less than that.
Slightly less.
Slightly less. But while you're looking for it, so
I'll find it here in a second.
I guess the thing is like, it's one tournament that effectively turns out to be three tournaments, and they had to do that to try to build a margin of error for COVID-19, right? Which basically means they have an international flight because you can't combine international and domestic play at all in any capacity. And it is the World Series of Poker, which means they need to encompass everybody. So they would have to have two flights. So that makes sense there. So they decide to have the domestic, the international. They play down to the final person of each of those, and then they come back to play heads up. Now, the European Tour, we know, they played down to the final nine. They had to travel to play the final table where they played live poker. And one gentleman was not comfortable traveling. He did not travel.
Right. So a gentleman from China, Pion Sun, sure I messed that pronunciation up, he chose not to travel due to the COVID situation. And the event took place at the King's Casino in Razvodov in the Czech Republic, basically.
Okay.
That was the live event, mm-hmm. right? And so he chose not to travel. And per their rules...
Which, by the way, their rules are posted and known prior to you registering.
Right, the rules are posted.
It's very important that people understand that, I think.
I'm going to disagree with some of these rules and say that I don't like them. I think that they should have been
But
different.
Nonetheless,
they're posted, and it's okay.
Prior
right?
to registering for the tournament, which is very important.
Right, no secrets. There's no secrets here.
Nothing came from behind.
So to go back to one question here, there were 674 players in the international version,
okay.
and 705 players in the U.S. version.
So okay, so it was a little bit more
in the U.S., which that surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that there would be way more on the international side. for a couple reasons. One, if you're in the U.S., you can go to Canada or Mexico and sort of take your shot at both somehow. Mm-hmm. Also, I just think that, you know, being limited to Las Vegas and New Jersey, where the international one pretty much has the rest of the world, it surprises me that they only got 674 for the GG poker version.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but whatever. So one guy chooses not to play. Now, and he was given ninth place money of $75,000.
So here's my question. Like, here's the thing that I don't like about this. So the decision is, and this is prior to, everybody knows this at the start of the tournament, if you decide you cannot travel or for whatever reason you cannot show up, you are taken out and you are paid last place money. You're not blighted off. Your chips do not remain in play. I feel like you could be like, okay, we can make an argument for that, right? But what happens when you have multiple players where that happens to? And that's where there's a problem, because the number of chips that either come out of play.
Well, I can tell you by rule, out of play,
that's pretty substantial, because if you, especially because you're going from, especially now, because you're taking a tournament that goes from an international tournament where you're accumulating X number of chips that are in play to a domestic tournament, X number of chips in play. Now, I get, well, maybe they just go back and I assume they start like maybe with the same number of chips. It's like a third separate tournament, or do they?
Well, no. For the third separate tournament, they're starting all over.
They start all over. So it is effectively three tournaments.
So that part doesn't matter. But I mean, by rule, say there was three people that chose not to show up for the international.
Right. Tournament. That's a huge.
They would just split ninth, eighth, and seventh place money.
Which is crazy. Yeah.
Right. Now, the other thing that what's interesting about this is, what if the gentleman who chose not to show up, rather than saying, I'm not going to show up, what if he says nothing and just doesn't show up?
I mean, that's the thing to do.
Right. You just don't say anything and you don't show up, and now your chips have to be put on the table and you're blinded off. More than likely, you're still going to get ninth place.
But at least there's an option. You have a chance.
There's a chance. And here's what else is interesting. He wasn't ninth place in chips. He was eighth place in chips. Uh-huh. So there was somebody shorter chip stack than him before the tournament even started.
Yeah.
So now, you know, he's doing the right thing. He's telling him, hey, sorry, I'm not going to come. And that's cool. Respect that. But he should have been blinded out, because you never know what's going to happen. Two stacks collide. Two people get, and I do want to talk about the strategy behind this and what would happen after we get to what happened in the United States.
Well, you know, so here's the other piece, right? About as far as pulling people's stacks out of play. Here's what I don't like about pulling somebody's stack out of play, especially at this point in the tournament. Like, if we're having a conversation about the tournament that's like day three and there are 7 days to play, like the traditional WSOP, we're having a different conversation. But at this moment, we're talking about the final table for the most prestigious title in the poker community, right? In the history of poker and in the poker community. Like, that's effectively the end all be all of titles that you want to win. That's the one. So it's not to be taken lightly in any capacity. And not that any tournament should be taken lightly, but this one, I mean, I feel like with the pressure of that and knowing that you're coming back in as the first person launching this type of an event, you need to have exemplary leadership, number one. You need to have all of, like, if you make an error, you need to be ready to own it and understand what's going to happen. And the way that these guys handled this, I just feel is crazy. So if you just take their chips out of play, right, you are removing how many chips were in play at that time?
I don't
know. So he had
that's dollars. That's price. Dollars. I don't have a chip count.
So let's just say he has like 8 or 9 big blinds, right?
Sure.
That's probably pretty reasonable to assume. He has 8 or 9 big blinds.
Right. He probably had more than that.
But let's just say, like, that's even if he just has that many, which makes it worse if he has more. But, like, if he has just 8 or 9, it positions somebody to go from, last place money or eighth or seventh place money to position them to first place money if they know how to take advantage of that situation. And so I feel like there's a lot of chips that are being taken out of play that strategically could benefit somebody else.
They could. And taking that amount of chips out of play doesn't overly affect it too much. I mean, if it was the chip leader, it would, because of the blinds coming up.
When you think about like a chip in a chair, what about the guy who had two big blinds and he comes back and he wins the tournament?
It does. And it does. But more than that is, I mean, the chips, yes. You take chips out of play, it will affect the tournament in the end. But the fact that a guy, especially he's not even the last place person in chips, the thought that he's automatically going to be ninth place is totally absurd. It's very easy to think that two players would get, you know, aces and kings and get involved in a massive hand and stuff it in, and some guy goes busted and he ladders up. He could ladder up two spots easily and never show up.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, somebody could get out of line and try to, like, pimp his stack, right? Or take advantage of the fact that his chips are dead. And, like, I feel like it changes the dynamic.
But before we get into all the strategy, because there's some interesting strategical points, let's talk about what happened in the U.S., because it's very similar.
Well, hold on. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what happened in the U.S., and then we'll talk about how to compare the two of them and what's to be expected in the final heads-up match of the World Series of Poker. That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. 2.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Alan McDill here with Jesse the Boss. Dustin running our stream and country over in the booth, helping us out with production here. So if you guys are just joining us, we've been talking about the World Series of Poker and all of the crazy things they've implemented, and kind of how this has been an unprecedented year, not only for 2020 in general, and not just for poker, but also tournament poker, and of course, the leading tournament in the poker industry, which is the World Series of Poker. So we talked about how the European circuit, the international circuit had their running. It was over a couple days. They played down to their final single player. When they hit the final table, they had some issues where a gentleman was unable to travel, chose not to travel. They gave him last place money and took his chips out of play. Now we fast forward into them playing the domestic circuit, which is here within the United States. They played down to the final nine, and they run into a few issues. Now, first of all, they play online between three different states. Two different states. They play down to the final, was it eight or nine? Nine. Play down to the final nine, and they have to come back and play in Vegas. Now, first of all, in Vegas, you can't play more than seven-handed due to COVID regulations.
Apparently you can now. Somehow they got around it.
It's political. You know, so there's that. So they get around that issue, and that's great. But now they have a player who tests positive for COVID, for the coronavirus. So they say you're required to come to Vegas. You must stay in this hotel. You must be tested at this time. Everybody was warned. You have 2 weeks quarantine. If you test positive for the coronavirus during this time, you will be ejected from the tournament. Right? So now we get to Vegas. Everybody played, 26, which is a few days ago, right? 27th. They play on the 27th. And then they come back to play, and a guy is ejected. So what do we do with his chips? Like, how do you think about this?
So here's what happened. The Upeska da Silva, sorry if I messed that up, who's actually a very accomplished player, has a couple other WSOP bracelets and some WPT final tables as well. About 1.6 million in earnings, I think, just in WSOP. So he's a good player. Not that that matters or makes any difference. And he comes to Vegas to play this tournament. He on December 15th and 16th, he noticed he lost a sense of smell. So he tested positive, or you already had COVID or whatever. He tested positive on the 20th. After alerting the WSOP, he had long conversations with Jack Effel. What do we do? What's going to happen? Jack says, you're going to have to show up here on the 27th and get tested, right? He still has some time left. He went and got himself tested on the 26th. He got a negative test. It was one of the, I don't know, the rapid, not as accurate tests, mm-hmm. apparently. Sure. And then on the 27th, they gave them a more accurate, more in-detail depth, in-depth test at the Rio that all players had to take. And he tested positive, and because of that, he was not allowed to play. They gave him ninth place money and again took his chips out of play. Now, I will say this was very clear in the rules that if you test positive, you're not going to be allowed to play and you'll be given ninth place money.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like this one is slightly different than the player who chooses not to show up. I think the player
is definitely different.
Right. The player who chooses not to show up 100% should have been blinded out. There's no question about that. That was just a bad rule or a bad ruling or just a bad idea.
But the question is, like, between the difference between those two things, right, is you have somebody who's choosing not to show up based on the same reason, right? Because of the coronavirus. He's right. Choosing not to show up because of the coronavirus. The other person is unable to show up because of the coronavirus. So technically they fall under the same umbrella. So
but they
should
don't.
They be treated differently?
They don't. Why? Fall under the same umbrella because the guy who chooses not show up can still change his mind and okay. actually show up.
That's a great point.
Right? The guy who is disqualified is never going to come back and show up.
He has no opportunity.
There's no opportunity for him to come back and play. So because of that, I don't necessarily disagree with the ruling of pulling his chips out of play and giving him ninth place money.
Uh-huh.
And had there been, and you know, some people say, well, maybe they should reschedule. I said, you can't reschedule. That's absurd.
Because well, you can't reschedule because the other people,
somebody else,
like, what if somebody else can't come on that date?
Right. And what if we reschedule a week later and a different person gets coronavirus?
Right.
So there's no rescheduling. What if four people had it? You still can't reschedule. You do what the rules say. You let them split the money, whatever. Now, if you would tell me that we're not going to do that in the rules, we're going to let them get blinded off, I would be okay with that as well in this situation. It's unfortunate that he tests positive, and it was just a bad idea to have this tournament in the first place and require people to travel to right. specific places to play and then require them to travel again. Maybe that wasn't thought out as well, or maybe that shouldn't happen. But here's another thing. Some people are saying, well, you can't just blind off their stack because now the big stack is just going to take advantage of everybody trying to level up and raise every time, or somebody is going to take advantage of the fact that this guy is not there to defend his chips.
Right.
True. Of course it's true. Well, who should that person be? That person should be you if you're at the table, regardless of your stack. Now you have a choice to make. Do I not have enough chips to do anything? Do I have to just fold no matter what until this guy's chips are eliminated if he's being blinded off? Or do you take the stance that, so first of all, it's not like you have to make this choice in the course of play because uh-huh. you know he's going to be blinded off, right? Uh-huh. We didn't know what's happened if that was the case.
Uh-huh.
So you think, okay, this guy, I have this position. He's going to be blinded out. This guy with the big stack is here. He's going to be raising every time.
Uh-huh.
I would say, rather than say, hey, that's not fair, flip it around and make it to your advantage. Knowing that the guy is going to be light every time, you can take advantage of that and come over the top and say, I'm not here to level up. I'm here to take first place. So even if you were low on the totem pole of chips, you can turn that into your advantage instead of a disadvantage. Even to the point where if you think that your chips are so low that the guy who's raising light every time is 100% going to call, mm-hmm. no matter what. Then you have to obviously change your range a little bit, but hands, you know, ace jack, ace 10 even, are now great hands against a random hand.
Well, you know what's interesting is, like, so you're talking kind of from a player standpoint. So if I talk from an industry standpoint, right, like, let me just flip and talk from the other side, because generally we're kind of on the other side of the spectrum, right? I talk sure. from the player side, you talk more from the industry side. You're really speaking more from the player side. So
correct.
If we look on the industry side, you know, I feel kind of like this, like it is our jobs as industry leaders to protect the players and the integrity of the game, right?
True.
That's our job. Like, yep. that's what we do. We keep peace. We protect the integrity of the game and protect the players and make sure everybody is, all people are created and treated equal, right? Like, that's what we do. So for me, I feel like as an industry leader, it is more our job to make sure that everybody is treated the same, right? So that means that, like, if...
So you're saying their chips should have been left in play.
Their chips should be left in play because sure. it's not fair to treat one person one way and somebody else the other. Like, they all entered the tournament knowing that this might happen. Now, we don't know. We can't predict the future, and it's really unfortunate that they're not here right now. But your job as an industry leader, our job as an industry leaders, is to make sure that everybody has equal opportunity at the tournament. And I think to ensure that happening means leave their chips in play, because that's what you would do if they were unable to show up because of a snowstorm,
right,
or a delayed flight, or perhaps they weren't feeling well, whatever the case may be, right? I feel like you kind of need to treat it exactly the same.
I think so. I do think that these two issues are slightly different, in that one player choosing not to show up and another player who, you know, tests positive and is effectively disqualified. I do think they're different. I could be swayed either way on the COVID one, whether his chips should be allowed in play or not. You know, I'm glad they didn't overthink it. You know, some people suggested he should get, you know, ICM money or something like that. I mean, it's just too...
You can't do that. That's
you can't do that.
Now, but I will
now
say
here,
this,
here's, here's something else that's interesting. Both of these guys were eighth in chips when they came.
Yeah.
So, which makes this conversation not as impactful.
As if they were first. As if they were
right.
first.
As if they were chip leaders.
But the thing is, but that's the point, right? Like, so I guess my biggest issue with this entire situation, right? The totality of all of it is, this is going to now be the industry standard moving forward for a major tournament in this capacity. And my concern is that when you create that
the gap in time and
the expectation of what, or this is like, this is bam, we're putting it down, this is what everybody expects, this is what we're looking at, you need to be careful about what you put there. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, you need to be careful about what that looks like, because it can have lasting effects for a long time in the poker world. And I just don't think that taking players' chips out of play is a good idea.
I think protecting people and understanding
and knowing that, like, listen, we have to be flexible. And yes, these things change. Can we change the date of the tournament? No, it's unlikely. Unless, like, you probably put it in there and say, like, if there's more than 50% of the table, then
right.
we
more than
this.
Three people are positive, we reach
right.
Then
we,
but,
then
I mean,
we
it's
make
still...
a change, like X, Y, and Z. But people can also take advantage of the fact and say, like, right now they can say, listen, like, let's say this gentleman who's traveling to, where did he need to go? Somewhere in Europe. He needs to go to King's Casino, right?
Right.
So, and he's
Czech
coming
Republic
from
China.
So wherever he is, like, just because that's where he's from doesn't mean that's where he is or where he lives, right? Like, we need to not forget that. So wherever he's at, like, maybe he can't get there. Maybe he doesn't want to go there. Maybe he's not comfortable traveling. But all of those things are really in a different scale. If he's unable to travel versus not wanting to travel, should he be penalized differently?
So that brings up to our final piece. They now have to play heads up. They were supposed to play heads up today.
Correct.
But they can't, because the winner of the international version, Damian Salas, was not allowed entry into the U.S. due to COVID protocol.
Exactly.
So they had to reschedule that. I think it's going to be played in a few days on the 3rd. So in the end, maybe they should have just not necessarily had the tournament this way, or I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate again.
It's a weird thing to look back on, but here's what I can say to you. This is going to be, so like 2020 has put some unprecedented rules for the poker community, not just for live poker, but also online poker. It's changed the way that everyone kind of fluctuates and operates. And it's going to be interesting to see how this sort of continues to flow into 2021.
And, and we still have, you know, we have WPT events that still need to be played. Yeah. And you remember they used to do the November 9th,
of course,
where they would wait 6 months to play the final table. You know, things like that may not be such a good idea anymore.
And we'll have to see what happens. Well, here's one thing I do know that is 100% happening. The 1010XL main event is scheduled on January
13th.
That is the second Wednesday in January. Mark it on your calendar. It's at 6 p.m. It's a $110 entry. There will be 5 bounties. We have Donna Murphy, Matt Hayes, Jeff Prosser, Joe Coward, and yours truly, Miss McDeal. And knock any of us out, you get $110 back on the spot. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to give away that $110 seat to the 1010XL main event on January 13th. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Alan McDeal here with Jesse the Boss. Wrapping up the program. Okay, as promised, we have the next 1010XL main event happening here in January. January 13th, which is the second Wednesday in, the New Year.
Yeah,
just after the New Year. 641-1010 is the phone number. 641-1010. How about this? We are going to take the 2020... Just kidding.
I don't know where that was going, but I'm glad you're kidding.
$2,000 tree, that would be a disaster. But how about we take the third caller right now, 641-1010. You will win an entry into the 1010XL main event tournament that will be happening at Best Bet Jacksonville on January 13th, 6 p.m. Frank Frangie and crew will be out doing their show live at Best Bet Jacksonville, 201 Monument Road. We will do our show immediately following that, and the tournament will start promptly at 6 p.m. with 5 bounties. The bounties look like Donna Murphy, Matt Hayes, Jeff Prosser, Joe Cowart, and yours truly. Knock any of us out, you get $110 back on the spot, and you're either free rolling the tournament or already plus $110.
And there will be live streamed feature and final table. Very fun tournament.
Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun. This was a great tournament that we had in October. We had 275 players, I believe, which was a record. So great small little tournament, lots of fun. So please put it on your calendar. Again, that's January 13th at 6 p.m. Best Bet Jacksonville, 201 Monument Road. Mark it down. So we're coming into the new year. You guys were closed during Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in observation of the holiday. Do you have any special hours for New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
No, just regular business hours coming up for, New Year's. No, regular business hours.
So here's what's pretty remarkable.
We do have a big promotion.
You do have a big promotion on Thursday, in fact, from 12 in the afternoon. So from noon until midnight.
Is that tomorrow?
That is tomorrow.
Wow.
So it's hard to believe, you guys. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve. There's only a couple days left. We're almost finished with 2020.
One day left.
It's the final countdown.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about.
Okay, I'm stop singing now. All right, so the final countdown from noon until midnight. $2,000 high hands between
$2,020.
$2,020 every hour, Jacksonville or Orange Park, either location between noon and midnight. That's the place to be. Best bet anytime between noon and midnight, Jacksonville, Orange Park.
Yeah, just come play cash all day tomorrow.
Great place to be for New Year's Eve.
And 2020 on a good note, pick up $2,020.
Pick up $2,020, and then of course we're gonna fly right into 2021, and we're not gonna miss a beat. So we have the Winter Open that's going to be the like the first big tournament series that's happening.
It's
since
the first tournament series since the last Winter Open we had last January.
Wow, that's impressive. Marking 1 year.
It's been a year since we've had it. We've had a couple good tournament weekends, but this is our first series. It starts January 21st with an opening event, $560 buy-in, 3 day ones, A, B, and C. And we finish it out on Sunday, the 24th. It's going to be a great tournament. We will live stream that final table. There's also a horse event, $260 horse. That's Hold'em, Omaha 8 or better, Raz, Stud, 8 or better stud. There's also a ladies event in there.
There's so many things. And like,
there's $1,000 six match.
Well, and here's the other thing, you guys, is go to bestbetjacks.com. You'll get all the information. $160 tournaments, all the way to $2,000 tournaments. Bestbetjacks.com will give you all your information. That's going to do it for us tonight. But don't go anywhere. End of the night with Rick Ballou is coming up next for Jesse the Boss, Dustin Country. I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table. And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart.